Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 308 on Friday, June 27th, 2014. Greetings from Cambridge, Massachusetts, settled by Puritans as Newtown in 1631 and renamed 7 years later in honor of the University of Cambridge in England. 383 years after that, it is now, of course, the home of two prominent American universities, Harvard and MIT, as well as an excellent public school system where my grandson James just finished second grade and my daughter Sarah is a literacy coach and reading specialist. The fact that James's school year ended a week before Sarah's has given rise to what we are calling Grandpa and Dee Day Camp, a week of activities that Darlene and I have been organizing for our grandson. We've been to the Franklin Park Zoo, we've taken a duck boat tour of Boston, and on Wednesday, I sat down at a big microphone here in my studio to record James's thoughts about reading on a Kindle Paperwhite.
You can take a photo and like put it on the Kindle of yourself. Yeah. You would never get to do that to a book, probably.
In a companion interview, you will also hear from Sarah about how the Kindle has helped her keep up with her son's voracious appetite for books. In news, I am going to take a closer look at an overlooked portion of Jeff Bezos' Fire Phone presentation last week in Seattle, and we will also learn about a setback for Amazon deliveries by drone. Also, The Guardian in London this week had what I thought was an excellent primer on what actually constitutes grounds for prosecution of a company under U.S. federal antitrust statutes, and I think it's instructive given all the Hachette-inspired loose talk about whether Amazon should be prosecuted for its negotiating tactics with suppliers of books. For tech tips, I will point you toward ways to protect your Kindle devices during the active summer season, and we'll take a look at the latest update for the iPad app Snipify that gives you handy ways to access notes and highlights on your Kindle books. In content, I'll also have some tips for places where you might find some books that would be of interest for your summer reading list. First up in news, I want to look back at a portion of Jeff Bezos' presentation last week in Seattle, because I don't think it has really received as much notice as it deserved, especially for someone really interested in understanding what makes Jeff Bezos and Amazon tick. Each time Bezos finds himself on a stage with a huge audience attracted by the buzz of a new product, it gives him an opportunity to do more than just pitch that product. In this sense, I see Bezos as a little different than the late Steve Jobs, whose persona on stage was, you know, kind of like a magician revealing an astounding trick, the next amazing product. For Jobs, I think it really was the product in question, whether it was the magical new iPhone or the astounding iPad. And a common description of the Jobs phenomenon asserted that he created a reality distortion zone at these events, just like a magician. Bezos, in my view, comes at these events from a different perspective. In Santa Monica last year, he reminded me of a business school professor explaining the merits of making money when the customer uses your product, not when you sell it. Last week in Seattle, he reminded me more of a minister intent on sharing humble but foundational truths that, if adopted and lived obsessively, will benefit the listener and the world. After noting the hockey stick chart of Amazon Prime membership growth early in the presentation, Bezos said the real story underneath Prime membership is, quote, patience, persistence, and attention to the smallest of details. He offered the same formula for hardware success, phrasing it slightly differently. You have to be patient, he said. You have to work at it, and you have to obsess over the smallest of details. He could have left it at that, but then he went even deeper, asking a question and then answering it with the fervor that sometimes seems to have informed the culture of the company he founded.
What's the most important thing Amazon has done in the last 20 years? Is it developing this reputation for hardware skill? Is it building this big base of engaged Prime members? I think it's something more foundational than that. I think the most important thing that we've done over the last 20 years is earn trust with customers. We've worked hard to do that. Now, how do you earn trust? Well, I can tell you how you don't do it. You don't ask for it. That never works. I think there is a simple recipe for earning trust. It's hard to execute, hard to do, but it's simple to describe. Here's how you earn trust. Step one, do hard things well. Step two, repeat. Can't do this tens of times. You can't do this hundreds of times. You have to do this thousands and thousands of times over and over and over. But if you do that and you stick with it, customers notice.
I think one way to understand Amazon's currently stratospheric stock price is that a lot of investors must expect Bezos and team to continue obsessing about the smallest of details in ways that maintain this very high customer trust at something like the current levels. And the way you can see that trust in surveys of customer satisfaction is that Amazon is at or near the top of just about every recent survey that I've seen. As for the Fire Phone, the product which offered the occasion for this latest sermon or presentation by Bezos, it is clearly designed to meet the needs of Amazon's most engaged customers, those who already trust the company to provide service at or beyond their wildest expectations. I am certainly one of those customers, and I look forward to giving the phone a spin when it arrives sometime next month. One thing for sure is that my Fire Phone will not be arriving by drone. In fact, the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, this week cited Amazon's December revelation of plans for drone deliveries. This was on 60 Minutes. Bezos had an interview with Charlie Rose. They cited it as an example of what is still barred under regulations that allow the use of drones for hobby and recreational purposes. This was reported in a post by Ars Technica by David Kravitz this week. The FAA has promised that it will revisit the commercial use of small drones later this year, with potential new rules in place perhaps by the end of next year, Kravitz wrote. He added, but for now, the agency is taking a hard line against the commercial use of drones, and it's unclear whether that policy would change. Another news item I want to bring to your attention is a column by Charles Arthur in the Guardian, that's the newspaper in London, explaining what constitutes violation of U.S. antitrust law in a clearer way than I've seen just about anywhere else. This information is relevant, of course, because of the frequency with which supporters of Hachette and the Big Five publishers have urged that the federal government haul Amazon into court for being a monopoly. Not so fast, wrote Arthur. He explains that falling foul of U.S. antitrust law requires three elements: a monopoly position, abuse of that position, and harm to consumers. He cites the Department of Justice's prosecution of Microsoft in 1998 as an example, in that Windows was a monopoly and the company used the monopoly to push out the insurgent Netscape browser. The judge's ruling on consumer harm had to contend with the fact that Microsoft had cut the cost of getting a browser from around $35 to Netscape to zero for Microsoft Explorer. He based his verdict on the potential for harm as a result of computer viruses if everyone used Microsoft Explorer. In another case, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission investigated Google over antitrust charges, but found that consumers did not suffer. In fact, they benefited when Google tweaked its search results to favor its own company divisions, such as Google Shopping. The Guardian piece concludes by saying that Amazon is just doing business the way businesses do, but that the internet means we can watch its activities in nearly real time. Quote, for now, keep watch, Arthur writes, but moderate the outrage until there's something to be properly outraged about. You know, most of the case against Amazon by Hachette partisans and others in big publishing, the Authors Guild, etc., seems to depend on the assumption of a future shift toward higher prices and restrictive policies once Amazon's monopoly becomes unstoppable. The reason I don't think that's likely is that I believe what Jeff Bezos said last week about earning customer trust being the foundational accomplishment of Amazon in its first 20 years. I may be wrong. If he veers off the current customer customer-centric philosophy in order to reap monopolistic profits. I think I'll be among those baying for an antitrust suit. Until then, not so much. And finally, in news, I want to report a discovery I made while binge-watching one of my favorite series of the comedy series, The Big Bang Theory. Eel Lake Stubblehouse is the one that put me onto that series, and I've been enjoying it. I think there's like 8 seasons or something, so I'm only halfway through. Anyway, I was watching episode 12 of season 4, titled The Bus Pants Utilization. It centers on Leonard, who's this incredibly nerdy scientist, and his roommate Sheldon fighting over control of an idea for an app startup. And by the end, Sheldon finds himself on the outside taking refuge across the hall at Penny's apartment. Penny's the normal person, a very beautiful girl that lives across the hallway from the four scientists. The show appeared in January 2011, about a year after Amazon began working on the Fire Phone. And one of the big features of the phone, of course, is Firefly, which enables you to aim the phone at an object and instantly obtain information about it, including where to buy it on Amazon. Penny's brilliant idea in this episode is eerily similar. She is shown aiming her smartphone at a dizzying array of her shoes, one by one, one pair, and then the next. And as she's recording the information, it's somehow sending the information about that pair of shoes to a laptop where Sheldon is grumpily entering data about it. Here's the audio of the scene.
These are Crocs. These are knockoff Manolo Blahniks.
Bored.
Well, look, you said it yourself. We have to create a database before you can write an alga thingy.
The algorithm. You see, Penny, Alan Turing defines an algorithm.
Bored. Okay, these are Steve Maddens. These are Nine West. These are Target. Oh, but don't they look like Chanel? These are
Nobody
Michael Kors.
Knows.
These are Roxy.
Nobody
these are Seychelles.
Knows my
oh, these are Betsy Johnson. They're so Nobody. Cute.
Well, I'm not here to suggest that Lab 126 got the idea for Firefly by watching The Big Bang Theory, but it does make you kind of wonder. For the tech tip, I will have links to a couple of resources for summer use of your Kindles. One is WaterFi, a company that waterproofs the Kindle Paperwhite and other devices. I did a test of the waterproof Paperwhite a year ago by dunking it in Cherry Creek near our home in downtown Denver. It survived the experiment impressively, and lately the WaterFi Paperwhite has been getting a lot of good press. I do expect there to be new models of e-ink Kindles maybe by the end of the year, but if you are looking for a way to read in the surf this summer, you might want to check it out. A Wi-Fi only model costs $239 without special offers. Listener Mary Butash emailed me a link to a handy roundup of 20 heavy-duty Kindle covers and sleeves, courtesy of the eBook Friendly blog. Most of them are available on Amazon, and a few are on third-party sites. If you're looking for extra protection for your Kindle Fire or e-reader, you might want to check this list out. Also in tech tips, listener Beverly Hall emailed me a good question after my coverage of the Fire Phone launch. She wondered exactly what can you do with a Fire Phone that does not have the AT&T service plan. These unlocked phones cost $649 for the 32-gigabyte model compared with $199 if you sign up for a 2-year individual or family contract with AT&T. A representative from Amazon PR emailed me back the following reply. Yes, customers can purchase Fire without a service plan and use it on Wi-Fi. However, they will have a richer experience with the device when paired with AT&T's network. So you could use the Fire Phone like a tablet if you wanted to take advantage of Firefly, Dynamic Perspective, Kindle Page Turns without tapping on the screen. But for $649 for a 32-gigabyte model, that would be a pretty pricey tablet. Also have a link to Snipify. They have a new update to version 2 for their iPad app. And the big advantage of this one is that if you have a big archive like I do and you want to find the annotations for a specific book, there's a search function where you can just type in the title of the book and it'll go directly to it. And then you'll have this pretty nice way to export notes and highlights from that you've made on that book from any of your devices to Evernote, or also to Evernote as a text or a PDF, and you can also email them. So that's a handy app that's recently gotten a good upgrade. I have two interviews this week for the price of one, beginning with my 8-year-old grandson, James, who has been reading on a Kindle Paperwhite since Christmas, and with his mother, who's my daughter, Sarah. And Sarah is a literacy coach and reading specialist in the Cambridge Public School System. As I said in the opening, Darlene and I have been taking care of James this week, and I had mentioned to him that I would like to do an interview for the podcast. By the time we set up the recording equipment in my office, he had decided that he wanted to reverse the tables on me by doing an interview of me before we get down to the podcast conversation. He pulled out a Fuji digital camera and began recording a video of me for his interview. Now, he's been a pretty fascinating child at every age so far, but in his current incarnation as a very bright, recently concluded second grader, he does manage to surprise me over and over. I want to include this brief interview up front, partly to embed it in my Kindle Chronicles archive.
Alan Edgerly, you seem to be a great technology expert.
Well, I spend a lot of time on the computer and learning things, so I'm not sure I'm an expert, but I like it.
Yeah, you're pretty good at it. So how does it feel being like that? Do you like being on technology at lots of times?
Yes, I do. It challenges my mind, and I like learning things, and some of the technology does really cool stuff.
Wow. The Apple Store says that they think that you ask the coolest questions when you come in.
Well, that's nice to hear. I like those guys at the Apple Store.
So, how's it feel being on the web and YouTube and everything?
Well, it's fun. If you search my name, you'll see all kinds of stuff that I've put up there.
Wow. Would you recommend what you're doing on the web and stuff to other people?
Yes, but I think they should also have a life. They should spend time offline and playing in parks and having fun things, because if you're in front of a computer screen all the time, it's a little bit boring.
I know. Yeah. I felt that way before. So how's your life? How are you doing in life?
I think I'm doing pretty well in life. You know, I'm 63. I'm in pretty good health. I have a great family. I have a fabulous grandson.
Do you have a wife?
I have a wife, Darlene, also known as
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that you're doing great in life and having a fun time. Well, thank you. And one more thing.
What?
We hope everyone listens to your station. Bye.
James is clearly picking up kind of a promotional bent, or maybe there's a future in PR for him. I don't know where this comes from. When it came my turn to be his interviewer, I really didn't have time to ask many questions because he seemed to have it in his mind that what was needed was more of an advertisement or a promotion for the Kindle. I was fine with that, and I simply hit the record button on Logic Pro as he sat at my desk in front of the big Yeti microphone. You will hear some thumps as his Kindle hit the desk, but other than that, I think you'll have no difficulty catching his enthusiasm for e-reading.
Kindles are very fun. They're just like books. And books, they kind of waste the environment with paper from trees. But Kindles don't waste anything. So a Kindle is electronic device.
Yeah.
Where it's like you just open it up. And the screen lights up. It's also fun because it lights up, so you can like make it light in the nighttime, and that's pretty fun to do. Like maybe, and you might say at first, I don't want a Kindle, but I bet you're going to get used to it, and you can highlight words you even want to remember. Uh-huh. Like, I'm reading mine, and it says, at the next aisle, I stopped. Hundreds of little carvings stood in a neat rows of the shelf before me. And so I'm like, I want to highlight stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So I highlight stopped. Up now, I just highlighted stopped. And also, you could say, hey, I don't know what at means. Mm-hmm. And you could highlight at and figure out what at means. Now it says, it's very complicated, so it's kind of hard to read right now, and I don't think we should get into this. But there's lots of other things. You can do a translation.
To a different language?
All kinds of things, yes, to like a different language.
Wow.
So I really think it It's just, a Kindle is so cool. Well, you even have, I even have a Kindle right here that you might see a picture of, and you can take a photo and, like, put it on the Kindle of yourself. Yeah. You would never get to do that to a book, probably.
That's probably right.
And the Kindle, you barely charge it, and it's very fun, and it's just like a regular book. It even has pictures. And
you can have a lot of books in one Kindle, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many books do you have on your Kindle there?
I have in my Kindle, I'm just going to, and there's lots of buttons. I'm going to click home right now.
Right.
And it's going to show all the books I have.
What are some of those books?
Okay. I have Dumpling Days, Horrid Henry, Tricks the Tooth Fairy, Horrid Henry's Underpants. I know some of you might be interested in that one.
What's that one about?
Horrid Henry Stink Bomb, Horrid Henry Rocks, that's Horrid Henry and the Mummy's Curse. Oh, I like Horrid Henry. It's a very good kids series.
Uh-huh.
And I just opened it. Now, I'll give you a review of one.
Okay.
Horrid Henry is dragged to dance class against his will. He'll vise with Moody Margaret to make the yuckiest glop. Goes camping and tries to be good like Perfect Peter, but not for too long.
Is Horrid Henry really horrid?
Oh, yes. Horrid Henry does horrible things.
Like what?
Well, should I read you an end of a chapter? I'll read you a chapter of Horrid Henry.
Okay,
I'll read you the first chapter.
All right, that's a good idea. And there are pictures there, I see.
Oh, yes, lots of pictures. That's what I was just mentioning.
Yeah.
I'll read you a good chapter of Horrid Henry's Underpants.
Okay. Do they all have names that have the same letters twice, like Tough Toby and Horrid Henry?
Oh, yes, it has like Perfect Peter, Tough Toby, Harry. It's cool. Well, wait a minute. Horrid Henry's Underpants, and now I'm going to locate a chapter.
Oh, you got to do go to and then
go to. Oh, man.
Oh, there you go. There's all the chapters.
Horrid Henry's Underpants. That's the chapter I'm going to read.
Okay.
Read. A late birthday present. Whoopee! Just when you thought you'd got all your loot, more treasure arrives. Horrid Henry shook the small, thin package. It was light. Very light. Maybe it was. Oh, please, let it be money. Of course it was. It was money. What else could it be? There was so much stuff.
Well, that chapter about Horrid Henry's Underpants turns out to be pretty long, and I'll have a link to the story in the show notes if you want to find out the story. We'll pick it up where James is winding down his reading of the book.
Forgot your underpants, barked Miss Battleaxe loudly. Henry blushed scarlet. When he was king, he'd make Miss Battleaxe walk around the town on every day wearing underpants on her head. Well, Henry, this is your lucky day, Miss Battleaxe, pulling something pink and lacy out of her pocket. I found these in the boys' bathroom. Take them away, screamed Horrid Henry.
Oh,
and that is the end of the chapter. Dot, dot, dot.
Well, what did you think of that chapter?
Well, I thought it was a great chapter because I like how the author, ends it right when it's the important part. And right then, she's going to start a whole new story about Horrid Henry.
Oh, I see. So it kind of leaves you wanting to hear more.
So you could, write an extra page and say, hey, Horrid Henry, dot, 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 dot.
Yeah.
So I really think you guys should get a Kindle, and it's just like a book. Well, bye.
The next night, I sat down here at the house with my daughter, Sarah. I told her I don't know anyone else who has an 8-year-old Kindle reader in the family, so I was curious about James's reading routine and what the transition to reading some of his books on Kindle has been like.
He reads in the morning when he wakes up, always, and he puts the Kindle right by his bed because he doesn't like to get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
Get it? And he usually reads for about 20 minutes or even up to 40 minutes if it's the weekend. Before he gets out of bed. And then also at night, before he goes to bed, he probably reads about a half an hour.
And does he kind of fall asleep reading it, or?
Nope, I tell him when it's time to stop reading, and then we have another bedtime routine that he does. He would keep reading for an hour. I don't know if we would ever stop if I didn't tell him to stop. And that was true of books before he started. It was the same routine with books.
He would read in bed before he got up, and
yep.
So this just yep. replaces that.
And if for some reason there isn't a book on the Kindle or we've left it somewhere else, he would switch to the routine back to books at those same times. Yeah.
What kind of books is he reading?
So he just finished 120 books from the Boxcar Children series.
120 in the series?
Yes, and he was probably, when you gave him the Kindle, it was probably, he was on book 30, and from that time until about a month ago, he read all the rest of the books.
Good
from
grief.
Book 30 to book 120. And so that was just the constant flow. I would buy 10 books at a time on the Kindle, and he would read, and then he would tell me when he was on the last book, and then I would buy 10 more.
And so you just go into his Kindle and buy them from his Kindle? Or would
so I did that at first, and then that took longer than just doing it on my computer. So then I started doing it on the computer, and then just opening his Kindle and checking those books through the parent through the Kindle Free Time. Mm-hmm. So that's how I
Oh, because we set his up under Kindle Free Time, so the only content that he can have on it is sort of what you've approved for it.
Yep, he only sees the books that I checked.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of the size of the font, is he like third mm-hmm. from the largest? Or
I think it's third from the largest, yeah.
And he yeah. just picked that as the one he wanted?
Yeah, he likes it, and he experiments with it sometimes, and he knows how to adjust the lighting if it's different in the room. And he looks up the other things he does with it. He looks up words sometimes. I have to say, when he first transitioned to the Kindle, he just read like it was a book, and he had some trouble, you know, clicking the page, turning the page. Then once, and he got frustrated, like he would lose his place, and he would come in all upset. But now he's learned how to do that. And then there was a period of time, I bet it was about a month after he'd had it, that he was playing around with it a lot. Highlighting, looking up words, typing things. There's places to type silly nonsense words, and he thought that was really funny. And I didn't like that. I wanted him just to be reading. So, but it was a phase that passed.
So you didn't say you can't do that.
No.
You just sort of got tired of it.
Once he figured out he could do something, do those things, it was sort of fun to do those things, but then he stopped doing those things. Mm. So.
Does he still look up words? Is that
helpful? He does still look up words, yeah. Huh. And I do think it's actually helpful for him. I think that he learns the words from those definitions. And he does mark some passages, but I'm not quite sure how he does that or why he's doing it.
Yeah.
But it was a sort of a game for a short amount of time.
In your work as a literacy coach and reading specialist, there are laptops in the schools, and this is at the middle school mm-hmm. level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which addresses the, you know, there's some kids that can afford this kind of equipment and others who can't. So on the laptop side of it, the school just makes the equipment available that all the students need?
Yes, yep. That's how we do it. We have laptop carts that go into the classrooms, and then kids can use them at their desks when they're doing writing projects.
Yeah.
But they don't have a similar thing for Kindles. And so Kindles aren't allowed in Cambridge Public Schools right now. And so that's just another piece of kind of juggling James's reading, is that he has to have a book that he's reading at school that's different than the Kindle book at home.
Are there any that you've got sort of in both versions that he can
read
at school?
Yeah, we've never done that. And he seems more comfortable with having the Kindle book and
right.
then having something at school that he's reading
yeah.
separately. And he would do that too with other, even before the Kindle, he would read two books. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, he might even have a book at home that he read at night and then read a different book at school.
Right.
So it wasn't too big of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And for traveling, I think that's the biggest advantage that I see is just, I mean, for me, I was having trouble keeping up with having enough books for him because he was reading so quickly. And then just carrying those books with us when we would go anywhere was hard. And now just having the Kindle makes it so much easier for that.
How about the price? Like the
yes.
that series, how much would you save buying yeah. a Kindle book?
I think
versus?
We saved about $3 a book.
Wow.
I think. It might be $2 or $3 a book.
Yeah.
It depended on the prices ranged a little bit, but we definitely saved some money.
Hmm.
Although I was sad that I donated the books that we had to his school after he finished reading them, and now I can't really do
can't
that.
Can't do that, right.
But that's the advantages outweigh that those disadvantages.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see that he's basically at home reading either way now, which means that the advantage of the Kindle is pretty strictly just the convenience of having a lot of books easily accessible. There's some
purchasing, but it's not that it's either better or worse as a way for him to experience text.
I don't see, yeah, as from my perspective, and I'm limited because I've just started reading the Kindle myself, I don't see a difference in how he's reading or the speed of how he's reading or how he feels about reading the book on Kindle versus reading it, you know, in a paper book. I think he's an avid reader either way, and this is just a great tool that makes it easier for me to get books in his hand. And because at his age, the books are so short, you know, in some ways most books are about 150 pages that he's reading, and so it just goes. It's like feeding a beast. You just have to keep getting books for him, and the Kindle has made that a lot easier. So I'm excited about that.
Well, for other parents that might be listening that have kids of, you know, this age or younger, 5 to 10, would you have any advice just in terms of perceiving when a child might benefit from the convenience of this, or timing on how to introduce the Kindle to a kid who really loves reading, or just based on your experience, any tips?
Well, it helps to have a grandfather who's highly motivated in this area and is willing to push us both, because I think I honestly wouldn't have gotten to the Kindle because I didn't myself know the advantages of that. And since you were enthusiastic and teaching us to stay current with the times, it helped in that way, because I don't know how it would have been different if he'd always read on the Kindle from a very young age. And the other piece of it is that James doesn't use a ton of handheld technology. He doesn't have a video game system that he uses. He does use computers, obviously, but not a lot. So I don't know how kids would see a Kindle differently if they had more technology use, if it might make a book more appealing to kids who are used to kind of having more technological gadgets in their lives. He was resistant for that reason, as you remember. But I think he, you know, now he just, the ease of it for him, it makes no difference. I think he would say, I don't know, you probably asked him, but I think he might say it doesn't matter to him whether he's reading the Kindle or a book.
Right.
He just needs something to read.
Yeah, and he appreciates the convenience, which is sort of a marginal benefit, but not sort of a benefit in kind.
Yes, yes. We did have a few moments where he didn't tell me that he was running out of books, and we have a policy in the weekends that he stays in his room until 8 o'clock, and at 7:30 he would come in and say, I finished the last book on the Kindle, and say, That should be told to me earlier than this moment. It's not a way to wake me up earlier. So we got into a better rhythm of me knowing where he is.
So you've got a little bit of a buffer for those weekend mornings that are kind of precious.
Yes, definitely. And I think he loves it. I mean, there's something, I've been now getting different books. You know, he was in that series for so long, so there was a predictability to the books he was getting on the Kindle. But I think now he's seeing, I'm experimenting with different books that he hasn't heard of, and he goes and he gets his 10 new books on his Kindle, and it's kind of exciting to him, and he can choose what order he's reading them. I don't know if the Kindle's made him more flexible in one way, in that I have a little trilogy that he's reading right now, and he read them out of order. And he was obsessive about reading The Boxcar Children in order. And now he said, it doesn't matter to me whether I read it in order or not. So I don't know if that has something to do with just that it came on the Kindle in a certain order and it wasn't in order, and if he's being more flexible about that. But
how are you finding books for him to read?
That's where I have a little help being a teacher, because I mean, third and fourth grade is not my expertise, so I have teacher friends who are helping me, and there's a children's booklet, Massachusetts Children's Book Award list that comes out that's predominantly for fourth and fifth graders. But there are books that are lower on it, and so I started with that, and then that led me to just on Amazon, I put in some books, and then that would lead me to other books that were suggested, and I'm just stumbling upon different series that way.
Do you generally find that the books you're looking for from that list are available in Kindle format?
All of them have been available on Kindle. I did just run into a series that he wanted to read, the Horrid Henry series, that they didn't have some of the earlier books in the series on Kindle. So I just got the later ones, and he was, as I said, being more flexible about the series sequencing. Yeah. But
He read a little of the Horrid Harry.
Was Henry. It? Horrid Henry. Henry. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty funny book.
It is funny.
I think he picked the most shocking chapter to read me.
Oh, no, I don't know what it is, so maybe it's terrible. Yeah, I'm excited for him to get to middle school, obviously, because then I'm going to have lots. I mean, I have many books that I can't wait for him to read.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for him to get to
And then
to
at some
point
he'll be getting into the free classics that are in the public domain, I suppose.
Yes, yes, that would be. And I haven't looked in. I have to. One thing I'd like to figure out is the library borrowing through the Kindle.
Oh, yeah.
Because I haven't done that, but I think that would be a really great service
Another
to start
resource.
Using. Yeah, yeah. I think we're good Kindle converts, thanks to you. Well. So we're doing well. I still do. I'll have to say one last thing that I think is an advantage. I was just realizing. I have just recently realized that I'm reading more in a dark room when I go to sleep, and then I don't have to turn the light off. And James loves to read under his covers. And so with the Kindle, he can obviously read under his covers. And with a regular book, he cannot because he can't see the print. And so we're both kind of liking the flexibility of the light of the Kindle.
On the paper
that we can
light.
Read me in a darker room and him with in tunnels and
caves. Yeah, a cozy place.
Yeah, yeah. I think he loves that element of it.
In content, I want to refer you to a compelling list of books chosen by Sarah Nelson and the Amazon Book Editors team. They call it the best books of the year so far, and it's a pretty great list. One notable aspect of it is that you will find two books published by Hachette on it, To Rise Again at a Decent Hour and The Fever, both published by Little Brown, which is an imprint of Hachette. I think this is a good way to underline the independence and autonomy of this group of book lovers that Amazon has hired to help customers find great books to read. Even with the fierce negotiation underway between Amazon and Hachette, the book editors call them like they see them, and that resulted in these two Hachette titles making the list. I've heard of many of these books, including Updike by Adam Begley, Redeployment, which is a sort of linked short stories based on experience in Iraq by Phil Clay, and No Place to Hide. That's the Edward Snowden story as told by Glenn Greenwald, the journalist. The one book on the list that I have read, The Painter by Peter Heller, was a truly gripping novel about a Colorado painter who finds himself embroiled in episodes of troubling violence and even murder. Heller was one of the Booktopia authors that I had a chance to meet in Boulder. I also want to mention a book that I recently helped a friend publish at Kindle Direct Publishing. The title is The Setup, a Jeremiah Funk Mystery by Gordon Schwarzfeger, priced at 99 cents. It introduces Jeremiah Funk, a new breed of detective who doesn't fight, doesn't even own a gun, and is both bumbling and gullible in his dealings with women. Gordon had a long and illustrious career in advertising, and now in his 80s, he is enjoying the process of bringing his manuscripts to the Kindle platform, starting with his first one that I helped him with. I read the manuscript carefully on my Kindle, and we each proofread it closely, so I think you're going to find it's quite free of typos and other distractions. Jeremiah Funk is an intriguing protagonist. He's funny, he's uncultured, and he has the appealing quality that he just happens to win in the end. It's been a while since I have done a project on KDP, and I was impressed at the ease of uploading the manuscript. He had it on a Word file, and it just went in flawlessly. And then just setting him up as an Amazon author was a very simple process. There are now actual tax forms that you fill out at kdp.amazon.com in order to get the reporting right with the IRS when the royalties start to roll in. I find this still a magical process. We worked on it for a couple of days back and forth, and when I had Gordon hit the publish button at about 9 a.m. one morning at his house on his iMac, they said it might take 24 hours for the book to go live, but when I checked two or three hours later at home, I just did a search on his name, and sure enough, there it was, looking great. He had a cover done by an illustrator that he hired to do the cover, so it looks good on the listing. And there it is at Amazon.com, along with Grisham and Stephen King and everyone else. So we also set the book up with Kindle Select, so you can choose it as a free borrowing if you're a Prime member, and you'll see it listed as one of the books in the Kindle Owners Lending Library. I was also glad to see that Oyster, which is the book subscription business, which seems to be doing pretty well, getting lots and lots more books added. I think there may be up to 500,000 books that are available if you buy their subscription. It's about $9 a month, I believe. And it now is available as an app on the Kindle Fire. You won't find it at the apps for Android store, but if you go to the oysterbooks.com site, you can download it onto your Kindle Fire and it'll work. It's not as robust as the app on the iPad and the iOS system because it doesn't have notes and highlights yet, but in a Twitter exchange, that they said they're going to be working on that. And so now this is something that you can do on a Kindle Fire. Of course, you'll be able to do it on the Kindle phone as well. It competes with Amazon, but you'll be able to try it out. And I'm always kind of curious to see if Amazon one of these days is going to have its own book subscription business. I don't think the Kindle Owners Lending Library really qualifies because so many of the books there come from Kindle Direct Publishing. A lot of great stuff on there, including Gordon's book, but it's certainly not as robust a collection of books as what you find in Oyster because a lot of the major publishers are putting their books up on Oyster. That's it for this week. I do have an announcement concerning eBooks for Troops that I want to pass along to you. It'll actually show up here before the eBooksfortroops.org website makes the announcement. After 4 years of distributing Kindles to U.S. service men and women deployed overseas, we are winding up the project. We have, I think, about 50 Kindles on hand that we'll be distributing overseas, and that'll bring the total that we've distributed to just over 1,000. And this is new and used Kindles. Lately, it's been more used Kindles donated. For people have been glad to have a chance to take a used Kindle and get it into the hands of a soldier serving overseas. What happened was, I think, with the wind down of the deployment in Iraq and Afghanistan, we've had lots fewer requests from military units for the Kindles. And the other thing is that the price of the Kindle in this period has fallen pretty dramatically. It started out at about $259 when we started. Now the cheapest Kindle is $69. So for soldiers deployed, if they are interested in an e-reader, it's certainly a lot more affordable now than it was when we began the project. Ken Clark and I have had a great time working on it. We've had help from Garrett Riley more recently, who's joined the board and helped out a lot. And of course, my friend Tom Atkinson in Casper has been crucial in the shipping of it. We've also had great help from M-Edge Accessories. They've given brand new covers. For a while, we're sending their lights out with the Kindles, and so that was a fabulous partnership with M-Edge. And of course, they're still making great covers for Kindles, and you can check them out at MEdgeStore.com. One of my favorite things in shipping the Kindles was loading the messages that people would, when they would fill out the form saying they wanted to donate a Kindle, they could say thank you for your service, and you just get some really moving tributes. But the sentiment over and over again was people just wanting to thank the soldiers serving for the risks they were taking in order to defend us all. It's been a fabulous initiative and project that grew out of a chance Facebook message that I got from a soldier headed for Iraq, and then that's how I hooked up with Ken Clark on Facebook. And it's been one of the most rewarding projects that I've done in a long time. It does seem like a good time to conclude the effort, and I want to thank all of you who contributed Kindles or contributed financial contributions to eBooks for Troops. We'll have an announcement on the website coming up fairly soon, and we'll be winding down the 501c3 that we created in order to do the work. I'm not sure who my guest will be next week, but you may have a chance to hear the waves at Ocean Park, Maine in the intro, because Darlene and I will be joining family there for the 4th of July weekend. One highlight is the little village of Ocean Park has a 4th of July parade, and it features a marching kazoo band. I've never been in it, but I've ordered 4 kazoos from Amazon this week, so Darlene, James, and I, and maybe someone else, will be equipped in style to join in the musical fun. And everybody who marches in the parade gets a free popsicle at the end, so how can you beat that? Music for my podcast is from an original Thelonious Monk composition named Well You Needn't. This version is Ra Monk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording. This is Len Edgerly in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.